Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. What's up, legends? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I've got an amazing show today. I sat down with Damian Bajaya, who is going to share his story of adversity and how he uses structure, routine, and positive thinking to really put himself in a position where he can be happy every single day, regardless of what he's been through in his life so far. I'm not going to tell you too much more about his story because I want you to hear it from him, but I guarantee you're going to take a lot away from today's episode. I know I have already, particularly in how important it is to have a supportive group of people around you, how important it is to see everything as an opportunity and be grateful for all the things that you do have. And again, as I mentioned, how important it is to keep structure and routine in your life through the hard times and times where you're going through adversity and you're struggling, because we all go through it, some people more than others. But again, this episode is an awesome one, as I absolutely loved doing the interview with Damo, and I know you're going to get a lot from it. So I'm not going to say too much more. I hope you really do enjoy the show. If you do, please do take a screenshot, tag myself and tag Damo up on your Instagram story. We'd love to get some feedback from today's show and just let us know whether it has impacted you at all. But that's it from me for now. I hope you enjoy the interview. Right, Damo, so your first big injury in football was in 2015, and it was a shoulder. And then from what you're telling me, mate, it went downhill from there in terms of the old body. It just wasn't agreeing with you. So you had 15 shoulder, 16 other shoulder, 17 knee, 18 other knee.
Correct.
Mate, what'd you do? Did you run over a black cat or what?
I always said that, and everyone I spoke to sort of went down the same lines, but I don't consider myself unlucky. I don't consider my story to be any worse than anyone else's, because at the end of the day, there's always people out there that are less fortunate than us. But yeah, 2015, so these are the major injuries. There's obviously things in between that weren't ideal and didn't go according to plan.
Yeah.
And when you've got big plans for your future, I think, and it doesn't go according to plan, it sort of puts you off track a little bit. So 2015, dislocated my right shoulder. Sort of had issues with it leading into the actual incident itself. It was a bit niggly, it was a bit loose in the joint, and I knew it was a problem. So I kind of just fell over, went to plant my hand.
Stuck the arm out.
Yeah, stuck the arm out, and out comes the shoulder. And first thing I remember was initial pain.
Yeah.
And then second thing I remember was, holy crap.
Yeah,
shit. Shoulder's not meant to look like that. So
what are we going to do here?
I remember just putting it in my jumper, walking off the ground, went into the back rooms. And then the physios kind of put me on the bed, got my arm out to a position where it would slide back in.
Okay.
And I'm very lucky that, well, I probably shouldn't say lucky, but I've got loose joints.
Right.
So in my knees, in my shoulders, my elbows, all my joints are quite loose. So
even though that could have been half the reason why you did it, it was also half the reason why it came back
in. Yeah, so we kind of, later on after a few physio appointments, worked out that that probably was one of the issues. But yeah, just remember it popping back in.
Yep.
And just being instant relief.
Okay.
So instant relief for about
It's funny because a few people say, and I guess it depends on what limb it is, but a few people say once it's out, it's actually not too bad. It's once it goes back in that gets the pain. Like I remember, I know it's completely different, but I've done a shitload of fingers.
Yeah.
And when it's out, it's like, oh, it definitely shouldn't look like that.
Yeah.
And it's not too bad, but as soon as it goes back in, it's that's when it hurts.
I don't know how to explain it. So when I say initial relief, it's like it's the joint's back into where it should be.
Yeah.
But then it's like 5 minutes kicks in and it's
aching.
Instant pain.
Okay.
So I think the initial relief comes from all your joints are so loose that when it pops back in, it's just like, okay, now they've reset, they're back in where they should
Normality,
be.
Normality,
But then it's like, all right, now the pain's starting to kick in.
Yep.
You're getting a bit of blood flow come to it. You know, it's starting to ache. It's starting to... it's starting not to feel great at this point. So that's when you either got to get a nice injection, a couple of tablets, get on the green whistle, or do something along those lines.
Yeah.
It's not a fun injury. It depends on your pain tolerance, I guess, too. You know, I was lucky that I sort of built up a high pain tolerance through football and through sport. But when it did happen, I prepared myself pretty well to deal with the aftermath.
Right, and that's injury number one, and we'll chat about the others. But for a lot of people listening,
You know, obviously there's a lot of people that have that are tuned in that have also gone through big injuries, even small injuries. Like I was chatting about this on a podcast the other day about how, you know, for some people, like a big injury, their emotional reaction or their mental kind of state afterwards can be the same as someone that has to miss a few sessions in a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like that same feeling of going, oh, you know, you're so used to training or playing footy in your case, and all of a sudden you can't do it. And for a lot of people, even though it may seem like a small thing to from the outside in, it can be it can put you in a really shitty mental state in terms of not being able to do what you usually do, which can then also lead to going out of your usual routine outside of football or outside of the gym or whatever your sport may be. So post injury, or you know, the day after, once your shoulder's back in and it's looking normal again, and pain's probably settled down a little bit, and you realise you're not going to be playing footy for a while, what was your initial reaction? Was it, were you pissed off? Were you, were you kind of feeling a little bit depressed about it? Or were you a bit optimistic? How did you react?
I think initially, I just remember punching the massage table. So that was my initial reaction. Right. Was I just needed to let off some anger.
Yeah.
So I remember coming in and just getting on the bed, and before my shoulders even put back in, I just remember punching the massage table just out of frustration. And partly too, because I was playing at a semi-professional level, playing VFL for Williamstown, and probably knowing that that was going to take a bit of a hit was the most challenging part. The injury itself didn't bother me. It was, well, what am I going to do now? Because I just came out of the TAC Cup system. I was so optimistic about getting drafted and playing my best football, proving myself in a new team at a senior level. But I think I quickly worked out that I had so much going on, like at the time, that I wanted to do, which made, I think, the process of dealing with the injury so much easier.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Yeah. I think where we get caught and is, you know, by all means, if you're a young kid coming through, you give 110% to your sport, to you, the industry you're in. But I think for me, it was, I had so much that I wanted to do outside of sport that it made dealing with the injury a lot easier, because it gave me more time to focus on that, whether it was my study, whether it was, you know, wanting to start like a little side business. I think it took away from the fact that I was going to be missing footy for sort of 3 months. But don't get me wrong, I was still absolutely gutted. But it was my first injury.
That's good. It's good you touched on it. So I want to fast forward. Next year, you do the other shoulder, which I imagine similar process. You do all your rehab and stuff, and then you get to 2017. Yeah, you're probably feeling pretty good about the start of the season and ready to just play a full season and with good shoulders and nice and fit and healthy, and then you do your knee. So what is that whole, where's your mindset after that, and how are you feeling in terms of, is it, you know, fuck me, I've done it again. I'm over this shit, or is it like, you know, I've gone through it twice now. I know I can get back to where I was. Let's start this shit all over again.
Yeah, I always knew that I'd reset my mind to kind of deal with any injury that come up after this. And I think one thing I did after my second shoulder was made a decision to leave VFL. So I think one thing that worked for me was now I had a new goal. So regardless of the last two injuries, I kind of had to reset my mind. I had a new goal. I had a new challenge. I was going to go back and play local. And coming from VFL to local, you've got a standard to set. So I had something to prove. I got to pre-season. I remember it was the start of January and I was just burning it up. I was running really well. I was fit. Shoulders felt really good. I never had any sort of lower problem, lower leg injuries. Few minor sort of hamstring complaints, but nothing major. And then kind of went into the pre-season really confident. Probably the best I'd felt my whole career, which was interesting because obviously my load was a lot less coming from VFL.
And I'm assuming as well there's probably a little bit of less pressure as well.
Oh, you know, definitely. You're not I had nothing to prove in terms of, I knew I could play footy.
Yeah.
I just knew I had to set a standard, because that's one thing I was big on, was get to training, it's local. I had been used to a high standard for so long that I wasn't going to fall down back to that level and let myself go.
You want to bring the rest of the people
up. I wanted to carry the team along with me. So I remember getting to the first practice match, played a quarter. Felt pretty good. I thought, I'll play a quarter, just get back into it.
Yeah.
You know, touch the ball a little bit, get to know my teammates. So I went into the second practice match very confident.
Yeah.
Very, yeah, up and about, chest out, put on the jumper. And I just remember an absolutely awesome feeling. I just remember probably a feeling that I never had before in terms of footy.
Feeling like a weapon.
Yeah, I just felt like I could just run through a brick wall. There was no pressure, and sometimes I had let the pressure get to me at VFL level. Got into the first quarter. I just remember getting probably 10, 15 kicks in the first quarter, and I was like, do you know what? How good is this?
Mm.
This is absolute ripper. I'm getting my hands on the footy. I'm loving it. I love the competition of it all. And then second quarter, some guy slid in and kind of took out my knee, and I just remember an instant click in my knee, and it wasn't initial pain, so I thought, you know what? I've got to prove a point, so I'm going to keep going. Half time, and then we come out for the third quarter, and then I remember planting my leg, and as I planted my right leg, I just remember my knee just clicking and clunking and instant pain, and I dropped to the ground, and I knew it was bad instantly.
Yeah.
And I just remember being drawn with like emotion, because people in footy terms know that an ACL reconstruction is one of the biggest injuries that you can sort of burden your life because of the sheer recovery of it.
Not only physically but mentally. It's such a long process. Oh, there's definitely so much involved and also the unknown of whether you're actually going to be able to get back to where you were before physically and confidence wise and everything.
And you never really do.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, you know, if you feel 95% prior to doing it, you might drop down to 90. And that's the reality that I face. And I just remember sitting on the ground in the middle of the oval and just crying.
Yeah.
And that's me.
Pure emotion, yeah.
It wasn't even me. I didn't even fast forward 6 months down the track. It was just...
In that moment right there.
Pure emotion that...
Yeah.
I couldn't control myself. I remember going carried into the rooms, and I just remember having my hands over my head and my mum by my side. I had a cousin on the other side, and they were all just crying.
Yeah.
Because they knew how hard I had worked
to get back there.
Yeah, to get back there, but they knew how bad the injury was potentially.
Yeah, and you've also gone from one extreme to the other emotionally that day.
Yeah.
Like you said, feel like you can run through a brick wall at the start of the day and start of the game, and then all of a sudden it's, what now?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest question, especially for young kids coming through. It's like, well, what do you do next? And for me, it was never an issue for me. Like, what do I do next? I always had put plans in place for whenever I was going to finish up with footy.
Yeah.
But it was more just knowing I had 12 months recovery and I had to go through surgery for the third time in 3 years.
Yeah.
I think that's what the emotion was. And probably a bit of emotion of letting people down. Like coming to the club.
When in actual fact, you know, and I know that feeling as well. But when in actual fact, when you put it in perspective and you think about it now, like you're obviously not letting anyone down.
Yeah.
But at that time, I know what you mean. You feel like you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders, and it's all your fault type of thing.
100%. Especially when you cast expectation across someone.
Mm.
And I always have big expectations of myself.
For yourself,
just regardless. So I kind of just felt, and when it's in a team environment, I think it's a little bit different. You know, when you play an individual sport, maybe not so much, because at the end of the day, if you don't play, it's yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, it was the start of the year. I had built so many friendships over the summer, and we had put so many plans in place to have such a big year that I was just gutted.
Yeah.
Like it was more gutted, not for myself, because I knew I was going to be fine. But I was just gutted for the team. I was gutted for the people I'd worked hard for. I was gutted for just like my family. And then emotion kicked in just based on knowing that the recovery was going to be intense. And don't get me wrong, an ACL recovery is, it's as bad as they get. But at the end of the day, I just knew I had to deal with it. Like I knew, I didn't know what the process was because I hadn't done one before. I knew surgery was going to be involved. So we kind of went through the process, got the MRIs done, spoke to the physio, and I just remember the phone call after getting my MRI was, shit, Budge, what did you fucking do? Like, that was the phone call, and I was like, it's bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's like, mate, your knee's pretty much destroyed. You've got an ACL tear, you've got a meniscal tear. He goes, it's pretty banged up.
Yeah.
And I remember sort of the few days after, I couldn't bend my knee because I did my meniscus.
Because of the inflammation or?
No, just because I tore my meniscus, it restricted me from bending my knee.
Yeah.
So I remember just booking for the surgeon straight away, and he said, mate, we have to operate like ASAP, because if you start healing...
Yeah, in that position.
Yeah. Your knee's going to be bummed. So I just remember just feeling like worried more than anything, because I started thinking of my future. I started thinking of, well, what's going to happen when I have a family? Am I going to be able to run around with my kids? And like all these things that I... These are the plans I had put in my head.
Yeah.
What was going to happen after footy. And they just started running through my head thinking, fuck, am I going to be able to do all this?
Yeah, you know?
So I remember just going to see the surgeon. I said, mate, just your first appointment, get me in.
Yeah.
I'm like, just get me into surgery. I just want to get it done. So within 4 days after doing it, I was in for surgery.
Yeah, it's quick.
So I had it done, come out of theatre, remember recovering. And obviously back then, they started with a hamstring graft. So I had my hamstring ligament tendon like about, I think, 2 centimeters removed, and then they pop it in your knee and do what they have to do. So I just remember waking up and anesthetic was sort of cooling off by then, but I remember the pain just being in my hamstring. And I remember sitting on the bed, and I remember the physio came in and she goes, what, how are you feeling? I said, my hamstring is on fire, it's killing me. And she's, you know, she said, explain the process, because I just wanted to get it done. I didn't care about what the process was. Just fix me.
Just do it,
So, and then recovery, obviously, was pretty intense after that. Just a story on that was, I remember getting addicted to the Endone. Just because the pain was so bad that I was sort of taking 6 to 8 Endone every day.
Which is a lot.
Just because of pure pain.
Yeah.
And I remember about a week in, the pain started easing, but my body started feeling like it was rejecting coming off the Endone.
Yeah.
Because I said to myself, get off the Endone, just get to Panadol.
Yeah.
I remember the first night I stopped taking the Endone, I was lying in bed and I had my ex-partner next to me. And she said, what's wrong with you? And I said, I don't know, I was shaking.
Yeah.
Like I was...
Withdrawals.
Yeah, I was I was jittery. Like it was like I was having like a mini seizure.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not in pain. I said, my body's just... It's just, I don't know, something's not right.
Yeah.
So I remember just getting up. I got up, I walked. That's how good I was feeling. I walked to the cabinet and I just took an Endone.
Right.
Because I was just, I had to just release this, whatever it was that was happening, coming down. It was like sort of being a drug addict and...
Getting off.
Yeah, and trying to get off it, you know? So that was
kind of... it doesn't take long. Like, I've had a number of few surgeries and you're right, like even... 3-4 days getting used to it, and you do get used to it pretty quickly, and obviously it feels pretty good. It makes you feel nice and relaxed, and you can see how it's so addictive. It's a massive problem now, and that's a whole nother.
Yeah, and you can see at that point I kind of understood why and how people could get addicted to these things.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Because I just had that feeling in my body that once I was on, like I was taking the Endone, it was like all the problems sort of went away.
Yeah.
But I knew
for a brief period.
Yeah, for a brief period. So it's it's a short term suppressant.
Yeah.
But I just remember feeling free.
Yeah.
I'd lie on the couch, 10 minutes, the tablet would kick in, and I just feel amazing.
Yeah.
I just feel like, all right, now I can just sleep for the next hour, relax, take it easy. But the feeling, I knew it wasn't right.
Yeah.
But
it's artificial.
I couldn't help but... And it's a bit like washing away those problems.
Pushing away,
that's why maybe people turn towards drugs, because it does. It just washes away all your presents, your problems. So, yeah, that was kind of the first experience with the ACL.
Yeah. And before we'll move on to 2018, the injury in 2018 this year. So obviously, you know, we're talking about injuries, and it's to do with sport, and it's... Obviously, it can be absolutely devastating, especially when you put so much time and effort into your craft and what you're trying to do. And if you've grown up playing footy or any sport, or you love the gym and it gets taken away from you, it can be just devastating. But in the end of the day, it is sport. And there's a lot more important things. And people that are listening now are probably already going, you know, holy shit, this guy's been through a lot. But, you know... Outside of sport and outside of football, you've had a number of things that have come up that are that have been massive for you. And you know, we caught up last week, and after we've only caught up like three times, and I feel like I know a lot about you already. But you know, after listening to what you had to say last week, like, I was blown away, especially with your attitude and your how you've turned things around. But I want you to kind of just, if you can, if you're happy to talk about it, go into a bit of detail now about your dad and and the whole process there, and what we can chat about, you know, post that afterwards.
I think most people feel like they can't talk about things like this, whereas I'm very passionate about my story with my father, more so than my footy story. So obviously the first ACL 4 weeks prior to that was when my dad passed away after a 5-year battle with cancer. So I think it was end of January he passed away. The first week of March I did my knee. So kind of in the space of 2 months, this was all happening. So the first, if I go back to the start of him being diagnosed, I think I was 18 at the time.
Okay.
So it would have been my Calder Cannons year. And I remember him coming home and telling us that they had found something.
Okay.
And they found like a little lump in his testicle. And this, I think the first stages of a diagnosis is you're optimistic.
Yeah.
So
what treatment can we get done?
Correct. So the initial diagnosis was like, all right, you know, this is what the doctors have told us. How can we tackle it?
Yeah.
What do we need to do? What's the process? What's the steps? And I'm very process driven. I'm very, I need to know exactly what's going on. But with something like this, they can't give you the answers, which is the hardest thing.
The hardest bit, you know.
If you want to lose 25 kilos, well, you know, all right, week one, I need to do this. Week two, I need to do that.
Yep.
This is the training methods. This is the diet.
Yeah.
When it comes to this sort of process, and I was asking the questions, and I wasn't getting the answer, I was like, this is not right.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
It was eating me up. And
yeah.
I was 18 at the time, so grew up very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I learned more lessons from this period than I did from all my injuries, all my sporting achievements. So I remember getting the diagnosis, and everything takes time when it comes to treatment. So it's not like, all right, I can start my diet tomorrow, I can start my training tomorrow. It's like, well, come back in 3 weeks. We need to do this. We need to do a few more tests in between, and we'll get more results. Kind of got more results, understood that he had to have surgery, and it wasn't going to be a minor surgery, it was going to be a major, it was going to be a 6 to 8 hour surgery. And I remember we went in, and as he walked through the theater, I just remember him crying, and my dad never cried, ever. Like, not that he was emotionless, but he just always wanted to show that he was the tough guy.
Yeah.
He always wanted, like, he was the male, he was the leader of our family. He wanted to show that he was going to, like, stick tough through this period.
Yeah.
This was the first time I seen him cry in my whole life.
Yeah.
And it took him till I was 18 years old to to see him cry.
Yeah.
And I just remember, and I was the same, because I figured that I was tough too, because I took after him. But I just remember all of us just crying together.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like the first time I was like, wow, like, this is real.
It's real,
Do you know what I mean? Like, this is, you know, this could potentially, you know, be life-changing.
Yeah.
And I think it was more the unknown that he was going into theatre and not knowing what was going to happen on the other side.
Yeah.
So, sitting into the hospital waiting room for 8 hours was grueling, because you've got so many thoughts. You've got so much emotion. Like, I wasn't thinking about anything else but what was happening.
It's almost that feeling of despair, I would imagine, because you obviously aren't in control of any of it.
No. And that's the hardest thing. When you're not in control, you know, I'm a massive believer that you always control the controllables.
Focus on what you can control.
Focus on what you can control, and what you can't control will be.
Yeah.
Just whatever happens, happens. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't in control of the situation. Yeah. And it scared me.
Yeah.
It worried me. It was daunting. Like, it was crazy to think, but we just had to do it. And I remember he came out of the surgery, and then the doctors came and said, it's not what we thought it was. And at this point, I thought, well, gee, it's going to be good.
Good news,
it was going to be great news. It was going to be like, he's fixed, he's cured.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's not, we did what we had to do, but we can't get rid of it. And I just remember my mum fell to the ground, like she basically passed out. And I looked at my brother, and he looked at me, and we kind of just had a empty sorrow feeling. Like it was, there was no emotion there. It was like we didn't know what to feel, we didn't know what to think. And I just asked the doctor. I said, "Is he going to live?" And the doctor turned and said, "No." And I was like, "Okay, I didn't like." It was it's hard to explain in that moment.
Out of body.
Yeah, it was like it was a bit like that. It was a bit like. Like, is this real? Like, I thought I was going to wake up and I thought it was going to be a dream. But then the doctor said, like, we give him probably about 5 years. And when you give someone a time period on their life, it's just crazy.
Was your old man with you at this point when you asked him this question?
No, so Dad was in recovery.
Okay, so at this point he had no idea.
He didn't know what happened.
Right.
And we kind of questioned whether we should tell him, like, straight away what was happening. And in the end, the doctor kind of explained to him that, you know, it wasn't going to be exactly curable, but they didn't give him the time period that they gave us.
Yeah.
Which we both, like, we all agreed as a family that we weren't going to let that happen because we just wanted to give him hope. We wanted to give him the ability to think that there was light at the end of the tunnel. At the end of the tunnel. But then we kind of, so if we fast forward through the 5 years of the sickness, it was, you know, sort of 5 major surgeries again after that.
Okay.
Just more maintenance than anything. So it was, you know, can we extend his life for 3 months, for 6 months without sort of being a detriment to his everyday well-being?
But,
you know, he was, when he first got diagnosed, 110 kilos in the gym, fit. And then fast forward to last year in January when he passed away, he ended up being about 45 kilos.
Bloody hell.
So it's, you can't really imagine it, and I never try and get people to understand what that's like to go through that time period. But it's a massive change in your life. It's
huge.
It's a grueling process. You wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. I don't try to remember the process at all, because there's none of the memories that I really want to continue on with me. But all I remember was the last 2 days before he passed away, the doctors told us this was the end.
Yeah.
So me and my brother sort of consulted each other and felt the need to tell him that this was going to be the end, because, you know, it meant that he could say what he wanted to say to people. If you want to talk to me, my brother, if you want to talk to my mum, and if there was anything that he wanted to say to us before he left.
Yeah.
And I just remember this being the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. Like, harder than any time trial training session.
Yeah.
It was just, it just felt physically hard to do it.
And I don't mean to cut you off at all, but I imagine, like, at the time this wasn't going through your head, but when you think of it now, you know, when you put into perspective all the sports stuff, you know, worrying about whether you're going to be ready for pre-season, worrying about whether you're going to be able to play round one is just... It's nothing.
I just remember calling, like, I called the team manager during, like, all this was happening, and I just said, "Mate, if I'm not around, I'm not around." Like, and that's the only explanation I can give you. So my dad's sick. I didn't care about footy.
Yeah.
I didn't care about, like, what was happening there. I just knew I had to be here.
Yeah.
And I remember me and my brother sitting down with my dad, and I couldn't even get the words out.
Yeah.
Like, it was just physically, to tell someone that they're going to die is probably the hardest thing I'll ever have to do in my life. So we did it. We told him, and I just remember him crying. We were crying. We just hugged each other, and he said to me, that's the only words that I ever remember from this whole process was, he said, "I don't want to leave." And that's what he said to me. He said, "But I'm tired." And I kind of just... like, broke, like, my heart sank, like, it's crazy to think, but I just turned around and I said to him, "Dad, whenever you're ready to go," I said, "you just let go." And I don't believe in, like, you know, these sort of stories where I told him to let go so he's gonna let go. But a day later he passed away. And the day prior he was talking to us,
you know?
So it was kind of like that acceptance he needed.
Yeah. So he'd obviously been fighting to hold on, and
100%. But in terms of the mindset, around, like, during that time period, and I go back to it, is I think what got me through was keeping a solid routine. And we can delve into that a bit more, but
yeah, and that's one thing. Like since getting to know you from the brief period we've known each other, like that's one thing that seems to be very consistent in your life is that you do have routine, and even in those periods of recovery from injuries and with your dad, it seems like you know that there was stuff that needed to be done outside of that, and for you it was just business as usual, which for a lot of people can be hard. But as you explained to me last week, like. In your eyes, that's probably something that made the whole process of all of that, and you know, something as massive as your dad passing away, that you're able to continue on and see things that can be focused on outside of that. Whereas if you're outside of routine, those thoughts that are coming up are going to stay there, and it's going to be something that's constantly on your mind.
Definitely, and I think it's good to try and reflect when you go through things like this. But one thing that kept me going was just obviously sticking to that routine, and I'm massive on my training and my mental stability. So, you know, there was periods where he would be in hospital for up to 6 weeks, and we would catch the train in every day to the Peter McCallum. Me and Mum would get on the train at, say, 10 o'clock, and we'd come home on the train at 7, 8 o'clock at night. But I made sure that every day that when I woke up, I was going to do something, something that was going to take my mind away from the day ahead.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I knew it was going to be grueling. I knew emotionally by the end of the day, I was going to be absolutely knackered. I could have been sad, upset, angry by the end of the day. So I'd set my alarm for 7:30 every day.
Yeah.
Every day I'd get up, whether it was a gym, a walk, a swim, listen to a podcast, listen to a book, listen to, I was going to do something that was going to be productive, because I knew the rest of the day wasn't productive.
Yeah.
So for 6 weeks, 3-4 months at a time, that was pretty much my day, every day. And it was the best thing that I've probably could have implemented in my life, because, you know, you wake up, you've had a hard day the day before, and you wake up in the morning and it's like, well, all right, I need to reset my brain again.
There's two pathways you can go down. The first moment that you wake up in the morning, is that day going to be positive and productive?
Yeah.
Even if there is stuff that you need to tackle that you may not necessarily want to tackle, or that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Or are you going to let that hard stuff determine your mood, determine your productivity, determine your actions towards other people and the stuff that needs to be done, for sure.
And I made a point that I wasn't going to let it bring me down.
Yeah.
And as hard as it is to say, and as crazy it might sound to people, I just knew that, like, that it wasn't going to stop me in what I wanted to achieve. So I made a strong point from day dot that regardless of what emotion I was going to feel, physically how tired I was going to be, I just knew I was going to stick to my training, my eating. Because I think the first thing we do is when we go through something as traumatic as that is we steer away from that routine, we steer away from our diet, we steer away from what's worked for us in the past, and we turn towards the things that are comforting.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's your emotional eating, whether it's sitting in the corner and sulking.
Yeah.
It's the things that are comfortable to us that we console in.
And
that's what happens when we go through trauma. That's my experience. Other people's experience might be a lot different, but I just knew I still wanted to get outside my comfort zone, and outside my comfort zone was training and eating right when I had all these emotions going through my head. And it was the best thing I did, because that 1 hour that I spent in the gym, going for a walk, going for a run, it just set up my whole day. I'd get to the hospital and I just knew whatever happened today, like mentally and physically, I'm going to cope.
Yeah.
And it was, it was honestly probably the greatest thing I'd done. And I compare myself to all the other people in my family and how they were dealing with it. And, you know, I couldn't imagine how my mum felt at the time, but her approach was very different. It was like, I'm going to feel every single emotion there is.
Okay.
I'm going to ride as hard as I can. I'm going to let it, you know, get me down. And I understand that from her point of view. It's, you know, when you're a son versus a mother, completely different.
Different dynamic,
Completely different dynamic. But I just knew that, I was going to have a mindset that wasn't going to be defeated.
Yeah.
And when I tell people how my thought process was, they're like,
"You can't understand it.
You can't understand it."
Yeah.
But I wouldn't change it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do anything differently. And I say to people now, anything that comes up in my life, anything that happens from this point on, it's not gonna affect me.
Yeah.
Like it can't. Like I can't. There's nothing I can deal with now that's gonna be harder than that time period.
You know, you can get through that.
Yeah.
You know,
at an age so young.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You shouldn't have to deal with these things, but this is reality. This is life. It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
There's gonna be something in your life that you're not gonna be happy about. You're gonna be angry about. You're gonna be sad about. But it's your approach. It's how you tackle it.
Yeah, and one thing I've gathered from you so far, and we briefly touched on this as well, is that you're a massive believer in, and I really like this, you're a massive believer in, if something makes you unhappy or something doesn't feel right, then it's up to you to change it.
Mm.
And, you know, there is a shitload of people out there. You know, there's stuff that I still do that I could be doing a lot better, but there's a lot of people out there that are continually doing the same stuff, whether it be a job, whether it be relationship, whether it be the fact that they're unhappy with their weight, with their eating habits, whatever it may be, but they're not doing anything about it. So your approach is different. If there's something that you're not happy with or something that doesn't feel right, then you're going to take action and do something about it.
Definitely. And you get like you get one life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I watched my idol, like my mentor, I watched his life get taken away. So my thought process now is you get one chance at this. Like...
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a second opportunity to live life. Like, you know what I mean? You're only 18 once.
Yeah.
You're only 25 once. You're only 50 once.
Yeah.
So if you're not happy doing something, just don't fucking do
it. What are you fucking doing? Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, when people come to me and say, "I hate my job." Yeah, I hated my job too. You know what I did? I quit.
Yeah.
I hate that I'm 10 kilos overweight. Well, if you're 10 kilos overweight, do something about it.
Yeah.
Change it. Fix it.
Change it.
Lose
weight.
You know, if you got a circle of friends that you don't like hanging out with, get rid of them.
Yeah.
That's
so important. It's so important to surround yourself with good people. And we talk about it all the time on this show. And I imagine you, that's something that would have been extremely detrimental to you staying positive and moving forward with the stuff that you want to do, is surrounding yourself with people that are going to continue to bring you up and motivate you, inspire you to do better than what you're currently doing. And I'm a massive believer in trying to surround yourself with people that are either motivating you to be better or currently doing way better than you.
Yep.
That gives you something to aspire to.
I think it's a bit of both. You got to have people that you aspire to be, and you got to have people that you enjoy the journey with.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you're just going to keep enjoying the journey by yourself, you got no memories to look back and say, how awesome was that?
Mm.
So one thing for me was, and when you go through traumatic experiences, you really understand who the people are around you. And I'm grateful that the people that I thought were my mates were my actual... Because the stories you hear is, you know, I went through this, and that, and the person that I thought was going to be the most wasn't there.
Wasn't there,
Whereas I was very lucky for me, but the mates that I had prior to this happening were the mates that were sitting by the bedside with me, like, consoling me,
holding
my hand. But yeah, if you've got a circle of friends that, you know, I think... The people you surround yourself with, they have to make you better people.
Yeah.
And that's as simple as that. If you just become comfortable and you don't push each other and you don't strive to do anything better, you're not going to improve. Like, you're not going to become a better person. You're not going to progress in your career, in your sport, in your health and fitness. Like, it's just not going to happen. If you're going to sit back and think that it will, it's not. And that's the reality. And one pointer that I'll make now is I'm always trying to associate with people that are making me better, that I can learn something from, and that I can teach to them as well.
Yeah.
And hence probably why this podcast is happening right now. Is because we probably saw something in each other that we were like, you know what, I can learn from you, you can learn from me. And you don't know where these relationships are going to take you.
Exactly right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my point every day now is talk to someone new.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Don't continue to talk to the same. Obviously, you got your circle of friends you're going to talk to the same. Step out of your comfort zone. Meet new people.
Yeah.
You know,
don't get complacent with where you're at now.
Don't get, because as soon as you get complacent and you think, all right, I've done enough, that's where your success stops.
Yeah.
At that point, you said, I've done enough, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
It's not going to progress any further. So every day, like, you know, I work in a cafe and I just make a point. It doesn't matter if you're 65, 70, or if you're 12 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to make a point to try and learn something off you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not ask for anything in return. I think that's the biggest thing from people now is, well, what do you want? Do you want something out of this? And it's like, well, no. I just purely want to learn
and
grow.
And we spoke about it last week, and you seem like an extremely positive person, and you make a conscious effort, like you said, to talk to people you don't know, smile when you're at work, do all this stuff, and it doesn't happen that often, does it? We spoke about last week, you know, even with emails or texts or whatever, like when people ask you how you're going, like, fantastic, great. Yeah. Like, what's there to be upset about? Why are you, you know...
Mm.
Positivity goes such a long way, being grateful for what you do have and not focus. You know, I listened to a Tony Robbins podcast while I was over in LA, and something really resonated with me there. And he mentioned two things. So the things that you should always want to focus on what you do have, not what you don't have. And just that first thought needs to be, it'd be so good if we could change people's mindset around the first thought, you know, because a lot of people, if it's, you know, can I do this? Mm. Oh, no, I can't. You think of all the reasons why it can't happen, all the reasons why you're going to fail, or instead of what happens if it does work, or what happens if I can do it, or I've put in the work, I can, you know what I mean? So
as I think as people, it's like we want to fail. Because it's justification that we're not good enough.
Mm. Or it's justification to not even try.
Yeah, and it's the easy way. Yeah. And I put out just a little like video on Instagram a few days ago.
I'll make sure, guys, I'll have all of Damo's links to social and stuff up in the show notes so you can check out his page, because the stuff you're putting out now is really, really good. And those short videos, like, it can completely change the way someone goes about their day.
And that's the thing. It's all about changing someone's day, but... Yeah, going back to like people in general, we want to fail because we don't even want to try in the first place.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, if you keep telling yourself you're not good enough, you're not good.
You won't be good. You won't be. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the point of me trying to be happy every day is because if you just keep telling yourself that you're good, you're great, you're excellent, you're fucking awesome, like you're brilliant, like you that's what's gonna happen. Yeah. Like you're gonna be fucking awesome. You're gonna be good. You're gonna be great.
Mm. It was the same whether you believe you can or you can't do it. Either way, you're right.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, I'd much rather just keep telling myself that I can do it.
Yeah.
Even if it's me going to the moon, I'll tell myself that I can keep going. Do you know what I mean? But how do I explain it? It's something you can change very quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's just a mindset.
Either way, on either end of the spectrum. Yeah.
But I never get in a mood where I say, I can't do it, or today I'm not happy, or today I'm sad. I never use negative emotions, if that makes sense.
I
never put into my vocabulary that I'm sad, that I'm unhappy, that I'm tired, that I'm run down. I always tell myself that I'm good, I'm great, I'm happy, I'm awesome, I'm motivated. It's been more so since Dad passed away that I've had this mindset. But I've been more productive in the last sort of 12 months. And probably and it's strange to say, but the last 12 months is the happiest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, and going off what you've told me, it sounds like it's because you're now in complete control of all aspects of your life with your mood and your kind of mindset around work, like you said, being positive with what you're doing outside of work. You got a few projects going on at the moment, which is awesome. You got your podcast, which is great. Again, I'll have the link to that. You know exactly the direction that you want to go in, and your mind is open to possibilities that can happen, and you're just taking each day as it comes, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, and I think it's productivity.
Yeah,
100%. Productivity brings happiness. And that's one thing I'm very massive on, and one thing I want people to hear is stay productive, and I promise you'll stay happy. Like it's when you're sitting at home and you got nothing to do, and you're feeling bored, and you're feeling like, I'm never bored, man. Like, I'm never bored, because if I kind of get to that point, it's like, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
Can I listen to something, like to a podcast? Even if I'm sitting at home, like, what can I listen to? Can I get an audiobook? Can I read? So one thing I've done now is I don't listen to FM radio.
Oh, mate.
So for so people shit. Out there, like,
so
if,
shit.
Yeah, if you're on the road a lot, it's junk. It is like,
find a good podcast, find an audio book.
And that's what I do. Like, I've got my Audible. I've got a list of books that I want to listen to, and I make a point to try and listen to one a week.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm listening to Jarko Willink. I don't know if you
know.
Oh,
man.
Ex-Navy
SEAL.
So
good. So good.
So I'm listening to Extreme Ownership.
I think he may have done a podcast with Joe Rogan.
Yeah, he did.
That's great.
He's always on Joe Rogan's podcast.
You and I are massive fans of David Goggins as well.
Yeah, Goggins is
on about
legend.
Him.
So these are all people, like, you know, if you're looking for a bit of motivation, like, go listen to these people, because they've got, one, they've got cool stories, but two, like, their mindsets are absolutely undefeated.
Mm.
And one thing I've implemented now is knowing that my mindset can't be cracked.
Yeah.
Like, I just know, if you throw anything at me, I've got it. Like, I've got it covered. It's a very simple process for me. Like, this hasn't taken, like, a lot of work. It's just taken me having a shifty mindset to say, well, do you know what? Life's not fucking bad. We wake up in a beautiful country. Most of us wake up with a roof over our head. We've got food on the table. Like, what do you have to be sad about? Did your girlfriend break up with you? Well, guess what? My girlfriend broke up with me after 6 years too.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing... People let the minute things in life and the things that don't matter get to them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Someone cuts them off on the road. Well, I'm going to let it ruin my day. You know what I do? If someone cuts me off on the road, I smile and be like, I'm going to have a better day than you.
Yeah. What does Gary say? Gary Vee says, most things in life don't matter.
No, and it's so true. You know, as long as you've got your values, your morals, trust, respect, honesty, family.
And I think going back to the podcast and the audiobook, like, it seems something so simple, but it's almost exciting with the possibility, even just reading as well. I tend to not have the attention span all the time to sit down and read, so I listen to audiobooks.
Me
but
too.
The possibility of hearing or reading one sentence that can completely change your life is unreal.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened with me. That's 100%. What happened when I read The Greatness Guide by Robin Sharma, and that, I was already kind of doing the whole fitness thing, but it completely changed my approach to a number of things.
100%. And I think it's just people just getting those triggers to understand how they can make a shift.
Yeah.
You know, I think people think there's a magic science to being happy.
Yeah.
There's no science.
Or that they need to be lucky to be happy.
It's not luck. It's not science. There's no rule book. There's no 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah.
It's very freaking simple. You know what I mean? Do the things you love in life, whether it's your training, whether it's building relationships, whether you love arts and crafts, or you love going to bloody waterfalls.
Yeah.
Just find the things you love. You know what
Do
I mean?
More
I
of
think
it.
We spoke about this, like, especially with training, and this is probably relevant. If you don't love running, don't run.
Exactly right. It's a pretty fucking simple process, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean? If you don't love to run, just fucking don't run.
Do it's something
simple
else.
As that.
Yeah.
Go, like, if you love riding a bike, go ride a bike.
Yeah.
If you want to do yoga, do yoga. Like, I think people figure that you have to absolutely sweat your ass off to get a workout.
Yeah.
Like, all right, you got to get your heart rate up and you got to do all that and you got to get a bit of a sweat on. But for people just starting out, like, and I had this, it's funny because I sat down with my family. My family's not really, like, into fitness and health and diets and stuff like that. And the way they got into it, like, getting to fitness for the first time is, like, to go do boxer sizing classes.
Yeah.
For someone who's, like, overweight, never trained in their life, to go boxing is one of the hardest things you can do.
Yeah, buddy.
So, like, if you go into a boxing class and you're absolutely knackered and you can't get through and you hate it, you're not going to go back.
Exactly right.
Like, if you're just starting out, like, start, just go for a walk.
Yeah. It's like anything else, isn't it?
Just start burning calories. Go for a walk.
When you learn the guitar, you don't get up on stage at Eddie Had and play in front of a sold-out crowd, do you?
100%. And this is how people, like, get fitness and health wrong. Like, you don't have to go out and do an hour and a half grueling sessions. It's not, like, fitness is whatever you want it to be.
That's
you
right.
Know? Training is whatever you want it to be. If you're just starting out, go for a brisk walk. 10 minutes. Tomorrow, do 11 minutes. The next day, do 12 minutes. By the end of the month, you're going to be up to 40 minutes walking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's,
I agree.
And it's just an easier way to shift your mindset to say, nah, I can do it.
Yeah.
But if you're just going in way too hard,
yeah,
one, you're going to burn out. Two, physically, you're going to feel like shit.
Yeah.
And three, your mindset's going to be
shocking.
Absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, you know what? I'm just going to sit on the couch and have a chocolate milkshake.
Yeah.
It's an easy way out.
Exactly right.
So...
Look, man, we're gonna have to wrap things up here. This has been unreal. I've loved it, and I know that everybody who has tuned in today is gonna absolutely love it. But is there anything that you want to leave us with, or anything that you haven't said already that you want to mention before we finish the show?
I think for me, it's you don't need anyone's help. That's as simple as that. Because when you turn to that person, or you turn to just remember that it's you. Like, it's you with your own emotions, your own thoughts. You are the creator of your destiny. There's no one that is going to magically help you do it, make you do it. Think about your mindset, think about your emotions, and just do the things you love. It's a very simple model.
It's a very simple equation, isn't it?
Exactly right.
Amazing, mate. Well, like I said, really appreciate you coming in, and thank you. Can't thank you enough for opening up and sharing your story, because I'm sure it's not easy to talk about, and much appreciated. I know a lot of people would have got a shitload out of today. And for everyone who has tuned in, thanks so much for tuning in. As I said, I'll make sure the links for Damo's podcast and his social media is in the show notes, so you go and check out more of his stuff. Really appreciate you listening today and giving us your attention. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, and do me and Damo a massive favor. Take a screenshot of today's episode, post it up on Instagram story, tag both of us. I'll have his Instagram tag in the show notes, and let us know what you thought of the episode and whether it's made an impact for you, because it definitely has for me. So thanks for tuning in, and I can't wait to chat to you again in the next episode.